This is Charlottesville Tomorrow. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonprofit organization engaging the public on critical quality of life issues so we make informed choices for our community's future. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org. On November 5th, 2013, voters in the city of Charlottesville go to the polls to elect their representatives to 3 seats on the Charlottesville School Board. This recording is Tim Shea's September 25th interview with Ned Mickey. The other candidates in this race include Leah Purrier and Juan Diego Wade.
Mr. Mickey, thank you for participating in this interview with Charlottesville Tomorrow. The complete audio and written transcript for this interview will be available online. Information from this interview will be used in the compilation of the Nonpartisan Voter Guide being produced, co-produced by Charlottesville Tomorrow, Seville Weekly, and the League of Women Voters. Charlottesville Tomorrow does not endorse any candidates, and our goal is to provide information to the public so they can make an informed vote on issues primarily related to land use, transportation, public education, and community design. As you are aware, some of the questions you will be asked have been provided in advance. Others have not. All city school board candidates will be asked the same questions. We ask that you keep these questions confidential until all candidates have been interviewed. Each candidate will be provided an opportunity to review the excerpts selected for the voter guide before its publication. Are you ready to start?
Sure.
Question 1. Please describe your past experience that qualifies you to be on the Charlottesville School Board.
Well, I've been on the school board for about 9 years, so I think that qualifies me. But prior to being on the school board, I was on an active parent volunteer on the PTOs, PTO president of the elementary school, then on the PTO council, which had one representative from each school, and I did that for a number of years. I was on the Quest advisory board as a parent. And just generally involved as a parent. I've also been involved in a number of boards in the city, both prior to and currently. I'm on the Rivanna Trails board and have been so for quite a number of years now. Also involved in boards and committees with the Piedmont Housing Alliance, and those kind of experiences help know how to try to be a good boards person.
Question 2. What is your top priority for action by the school board during the next 4 years?
Going back to question 1, if I may, first.
Oh, sure.
I should have noted that I also went to Charlottesville schools all the way from grade school all the way through high school, and so I think that also gives me an inside perspective, and having lived in Charlottesville my whole life also gives me, I think, important historical background. As to the second question, priorities, you know, I think we are on a strong course. We have strong leadership in the school with Dr. Atkins. She's really transformed the schools under her leadership. And the number one priority is to continue to be supportive of her excellent leadership. But within that, I certainly want us to continue to focus on things that I think are going to make the biggest difference in consultation with Dr. Atkins and her team and other board members. But all the research suggests that teaching quality is the most important factor in making a difference in achievement. And so I want us to continue to focus on improving teacher quality. We have very strong teaching core, but like every school division, public, private, anywhere else, not every teacher is a great teacher. And so I would like us to continue to focus on what we can do to improve first teaching, so we don't have to go back and remediate as much, and so that teachers continue to have the support they need to be able to differentiate between kids at different levels within their classes. In Charlottesville, I think we have perhaps a bigger bimodal population, more diverse than most other jurisdictions. We have really the highest of the high achievers that go to every possible high-end education college that there is, and we also have a significant amount of poverty where the kids are at risk and struggle academically. A significant number continue to struggle. And so it's teacher development, I think, is critically important, and I do want us to continue to focus on finding best practices. And our professional development program has greatly improved over the years under Dr. Atkins' leadership. But I continue to wonder what we can do more, maybe turning more to a coaching model than a sort of a seminar model. So that's continuing to work on that as a priority. I think that Charlottesville's been a leader in the state in early childhood education. We have five three-year-old preschool classes. These are locally funded preschool classes. And all the studies suggest that money is well spent at the preschool age. So most our four-year-old classes serve most at-risk kids, we believe, in our community, and that's state-funded. But the three-year-old classes are what we've added and are paying for locally, and it's an expensive thing to do. Each class has a teacher and an aide, and they teach, I think we have 12 kids per class. And so it's an expensive proposition, but we think it has paid big dividends. And the kids that have been in the three-year-old, they go to a quality three-year-old and then a quality four-year-old program before hitting kindergarten, makes a significant difference. And so I'd like to see us continue to expand that. We've been through a time of tough recessions and have not been able to expand the program for the last several years, but I'd like to see us continue to look for opportunities to expand that in the coming years as hopefully budgets start to turn around and during the economic recovery. I'd like to continue to push for reconfiguration. I want to see us at least develop a plan that's a firm plan of when we're going to get to that, or if we're just not going to get to that, then I think we need to decide that. But a lot of people in the community are wondering when we're going to get to that. And as part of the dialogue we're having with City Council, and City Council has formed this Blue Ribbon Commission to think about school funding, have a citizens group of experts, and they're going to be thinking about not only the operating budget, but also capital improvement budgets, is our understanding. And we've had even recent discussions to make sure that that is a topic that they're going to consider. And so I hope coming out of that commission there's going to be some real dialogue with the city and the residents in deciding how we get to a reconfiguration. You know, I'd like it to happen within 5 years, but I don't know that that's going to happen, but I do want to continue to push forward with that idea because I think it's the right way for this division to go. This school system has been fortunate to not, the city has been sort of fortunate that we haven't had to build new schools because of enrollment, like many other places, including Albemarle, that have sort of been forced to build new buildings and add additions and that sort of thing. And that's been nice, but as a result, our school buildings are this essentially the same school buildings they've been, particularly Walker and Buford. And I think it's time for the community to really look at reinvesting in them and building a modern learning community. So that's one of the things. It looks like we're going to talk about that a little more later. I think we need to continue to push towards critical thinking skills and problem-based learning, so that it's, and I see we're going to be talking about assessments later, but I think that a lot of us, including people in the division in central office, are worried that because of accountability testing that we sort of forced to spend too much time on test prep and not enough time on deep learning and critical thinking skills. So I think that's a challenge for an ongoing challenge for the coming years to delve into that deeper.
Question 3. Is your school division recruiting the best teachers and measuring their performance effectively, and how do you know?
I think we do a great job of recruiting quality teachers. A lot of the teachers are coming in with experience. Teachers come to Charlottesville because they're looking for a challenge, I think a lot of them, and they know that our division has this significantly bimodal population and a lot of diversity, which really brings a lot of richness to our school division. And I think we do get quality applicants. I think we continue to support getting quality applicants through pay. Our pay is at or above the regional pay scale, and we have a nice benefit package that we offer teachers, and so I think that's important to support getting high-quality teachers. The teacher evaluation forms have continued to evolve since I've been on the board. When I first got on the board, we really were not, I think, doing a very good job of teacher evaluations, but that's been a real point of emphasis in the past 5 years or so, and our evaluation process and forms are really significantly better. We administrators spend a lot of their time going out probably on a daily basis and going into classrooms and looking for to make sure that good teaching is going on. They have a list of what's called walkthroughs. They do walkthroughs. They have a list of look-fors. And so when they go into a class, they just stop in briefly and they look for student engagement. Are the students participating in the class? Are they sitting back? Is it a lecture style going on, or is it more of a participatory exercise? So they have this long list of look-throughs that they're doing, and they're walking through, as I say, on a very regular basis to see what's going on and make sure that quality teaching is going on in our classrooms. And these days they're making notes digitally on their their phones probably, and we have software that they're able to do this, and so that's sort of been an evolving thing. And
what happened to the Social Security office?
Oh, that moved a long time ago. Is that on Pantone? Okay. Okay. I gave a correct answer to him, too. For the listeners, somebody just popped in the interview room here and asked us an unrelated question about directions. That's why there's a break in the action here. But the evaluation forms have changed a lot over the years, and they're continuing to change. And part of that is a response to state and federal mandates, and that part of the teacher evaluation process now has to include measurable growth measures. And so our staff has worked hard over the last years with teachers to develop growth measures that everybody thinks is fair. And so that's been implemented now. Is a brand new thing, and so I think we're doing a lot to assess teacher quality and try to work on it. Again, as I said in the second question, I think teacher quality is critically important. We have a teacher mentor who works with our new teachers and also works with just general PD for other teachers, but needs to be a point of emphasis. Continue to be a point of emphasis.
Question 4. Why do we have persistent achievement gaps, and what's the single most important thing you will do to close those gaps?
Yeah, and obviously this is a question that every school division everywhere struggles with. The essential reason is that there's a high correlation between poverty and struggling in school, and as long as we have poverty, then presumably we're going to continue to have kids who have risk factors for having difficulties at school. Poverty just brings so many other elements into a child's life that make school less important, and the parents maybe had a bad experience in school and didn't do well at school themselves, and so it can be cyclical, and there can just be a struggle to eat food, struggle for time. There's not a quiet place to do homework. There's just a general lack of verbal richness at the home, particularly in the early years. Is research shows that that's just critical, that kids who don't grow up in a word-rich environment suffer when they get to school. So it's a bigger problem than the schools, and it needs a bigger answer than the schools. And I think that the city of Charlottesville has been a progressive city and is continuing to look for ways to help out with the underlying issues. We were fortunate to get, after a couple of years of trying, a major grant. I think it's called the Promise Neighborhood Grant, that's working in the 10th and Page Street area in the West Haven community. And that's brought a lot of resources to bear to help with some of the underlying issues. And recently they just installed Wi-Fi for the whole West Haven community. And I think that's really important, particularly since our school division now has a one-to-one computer initiative for middle school and high school, and the high school kids can take their computers home. And so I think that that's really important to give them sort of a level playing field when it comes to digital access. And I'd like to see us be able to get that to other public housing communities, so that again the playing field is more evenly based on that. As you know, as far as the one thing you can do, I don't think there is a one thing you can do. I think you need to focus on all the things that make education work, and that's what teachers are doing every day. I think that again, teacher quality and high quality teaching is critically important. I think that preschool is critically important. I think that working with parents is important to get them to understand the basic things that they need to be doing to help their children succeed at school. And that's something I think that we could do more of. We have started a couple of years ago a parent university that we have once or twice a year that offers a variety of courses that parents can come in and teach. And we've sponsored buses to get there and food and that sort of thing to try to increase attendance. And you get some parents that way, but I think that we need to continue to look for ways to engage parents who might otherwise not be engaged, and just again to emphasize the importance of education and what they can be doing at home to help out the situation. So I think it's a multi-pronged problem, and it's going to require a multi-pronged answer that we need to just continue to do the best practices as research points out what those are.
Question 5. Describe a part of the school division that would benefit from increased city and county cooperation that you would make a priority.
Well, I guess initially I'd like to say that I and the city school board in general and central office are wide open to any and all collaborative efforts that anybody thinks of. And so if the county is not approaching us with any ideas that we're saying no to, we are wide open to consideration of any and all collaborations. And we have a lot of collaborations, and our staffs do get along well together. They are in communication with each other about best practices and what we can do to try to improve the education of the area's children. We had to come up with one specific example. However, we have had an idea over the past couple of years that it would make sense for the school divisions to collaborate on a virtual school program. Virtual classes are kind of a wave of the future, and they're now students are required to take at least one virtual class before they graduate. It's also a thing where a lot of private vendors are coming in, and even other school divisions are creating virtual classrooms, and high school programs where they can essentially lure kids away from our programs if we don't have them and essentially take our enrollment if we don't have a virtual program. So it makes sense. It's a way of a future. It's a way to give kids yet another option for learning. And, you know, different kids learn in different ways, and so it's important just to have options out there. And virtual learning is a way that some kids can really achieve and move at their own pace and do it in spare time and that sort of thing. So it makes sense for us to develop them. Each division is working on them. We've been talking to each other about how to do a joint program, and so far that has not been gelling, and I would like to continue to see us move towards a joint program because I think there's a lot of logic in it. So I hope that can come about.
Question 6. What's your view of the proliferation of high-stakes standardized tests?
I think that, first off, I want to start out with a compliment for it. I think that No Child Left Behind, the SOLs, has done a very important service in that through the testing and the requirements, it has shined a light on the significant number of kids who have struggled over the years and have not been succeeding in schools. I think that before those high-stakes testings were introduced, that you wouldn't hear much about that, that you would hear about all the successes at a school, and there was this large group of students that were continuing to struggle and not succeed. And so I think these testing has shown a light on the problem and made it clear that that's not acceptable, because it's not acceptable. With that said, I think that there's been a lot of problems with the high-stakes testing, and I think that they continue to try to make tweaks. Virginia was given a waiver from No Child Left Behind, but essentially to apply for the waiver and to qualify for the waiver, you essentially have to adopt a lot of the things that were sort of part of No Child Left Behind with high-stakes testing and that sort of thing. And so we're still deep in high assessments. And I think that having one test at the end of the year be the be-all and end-all is not the way to go. I think that it ought to be smaller tests over the course of the year and measuring growth. I think that there's been a lot of talk of moving towards a growth model so that we see how much kids are growing in their education. And that's not perfect either, because kids at the high end, for instance, if they're getting 90s, if they're getting A's, they don't have that much room to move. And so a high-functioning school that has really high-achieving kids may not show that much growth. So I think it's important to have assessments. I think it's important to have accountability. I think that we do need to move more towards growth model and look for other ways to better analyze, define, explain, show what schools are doing well and what schools aren't doing well. I think the tests and the labels that get put on them as a result of these tests are really not accurate and fair. Our school division is blessed to have a extremely strong fine arts program that won all kinds of awards, and yet, you know, that's not in there. Our school division has an extremely strong AP program, probably the strongest in the region, and again, those kind of things just aren't analyzed as part of this or part of the grading system that they're now coming up with. So I think that the assessments, I think we need to have something. I think that some of the governor's race could change that. I think Terry McAuliffe has said that he's not in favor of the end-of-the-year high-stakes testing, and I think that could be an important change if we get to that. I think that the way things are now, that we tend to focus too much on the testing, and I think that's something that we hear from parents, is that they feel like, and this is true in all the public schools around here, that you hear people complaining about that there's too much focus on testing. And so I think we need to get away with that, and that kind of goes back to the getting more into critical thinking and hands-on problem-solving learning, and those things are tougher to have sort of standardized tests for. But I know that smart people are working on these issues, and we need to continue to look for ways to have a fairer way to continue to have accountability.
Question 7. Would you support the regular involvement of a non-voting student representative on your school board?
That's not something we've ever really had much of a discussion about on our board. I think that I'm certainly open to the idea. I think Albemarle is looking to move towards that, and I think that their approach of doing it, if one were to do it, would be the way to go, where you don't have one person who's there all year, all semester, even that you'd have sort of a rotating thing of students coming through. So I'm certainly open to the discussion. I don't think it's a panacea for getting student input. I think that you're still essentially hearing from one person and not the student body. I think that we do surveys, and I think that surveys can be an accurate way, in addition to just hearing from parents and students themselves. So I don't think it's a magic anything, but I know that some boards do it, and I'm open to the idea.
Question 8. Charlottesville City Council has provided the school division with one-time funds to balance recent budgets. What steps should council and the school board take to help build a more sustainable school budget?
Well, that's a dialogue that's going on right now. And again, the city has formed this blue ribbon task force of people with a variety of backgrounds and expertises, and they are talking about that very issue. And then I think at the end they're going to do a report, and that's scheduled for December, and then the city council and school board will be talking more about it once we get that report. I think that obviously the biggest factor that has led to the problems we have is the state backing off on its commitment to education and cutting funding, and I think that that's just not appropriate. I think that the state, and maybe with the improving economy, maybe that'll start to turn around. But that has been the major factor, is cutting of state mostly, and also some federal funding that has led to that. If we're going to even have the same budget that we had in prior years, that the city council has had to come up with more money to fund us. And that's essentially where we've been. We've had a flat budget for, I think it's about 4 years now. And if you're going to give your employees raises, then you have to find cuts places. We've cut about 41 positions, I think, so that we can do some initiatives and give some raises. And also there's cost of living increases that you just don't have any control over health insurance and contracts with outside vendors, and our contracts with the city for transportation, for instance, have gone up. And so when those things go up and your budget is flat, you got to cut other places that are painful. And we've spent a lot of time in the last few years cutting and trying to get down to a sustainable level, while meeting the needs and expectations of our citizens. It would save a lot of money to close an elementary school, but every time we think about that, we hear strong objections all around that everybody likes their neighborhood school. And the reconfiguration, frankly, is part of that. That came from the idea of when we had an efficiency study 5 years ago by a professional organization that they, one of many suggestions that they had, was closing an elementary school. And that led to the reconfiguration discussions, and what we ended up with was the idea of consolidating into one middle school and not having Walker be the upper elementary school it is, but instead being a preschool center. And doing that was going to save, and I don't have the figures right in mind, but it's in the neighborhood of $500,000 a year in operating expenses. By doing the reconfiguration, we pay rent for our Henry Avenue alternative education program and for the adult education program, and I guess about $80,000 a year each. And so, anyway, that was part of the reason for moving towards reconfiguration, and obviously the capital expenditure of getting to reconfiguration is a big number, and so it's hard to get that excited about the savings when you're spending a lot of money to get there. But I think that, you know, we have to continue to look for ways to save money and to be as efficient as we can. And I know the school board and central office is committed to continue to do that. But we have been in this process for a few years now where we've been trying to make every cut we can while maintaining low class sizes, while maintaining full service elementary schools at each elementary schools that are fully staffed with Quest teachers and art teachers and music teachers. And we think that that's a high value in the community to have fully staffed elementary schools, even though they're small. And that's really where our money is tied up in, is in our small elementary school buildings that are full service and our staff level. That's the reason we have high per pupil expenditures. So I think it's important to note that the city's per capita expenditure for schools is actually right at average. And so you hear a lot about the per pupil expenditure, but the per capita of city residents spending is right at state average, whereas the city's expenditure on social services is significantly higher than the state average, for instance. I think that this is a dialogue we need to continue to have and to continue to look for efficiencies, but it ultimately comes down to the citizens of whether they want to continue to fund the school system that we have, or whether we want to reform and not have full service elementary schools, or close an elementary school, or lose out on some of the things that make our school system our school system. We don't have to have an elementary Spanish program right now. We teach Spanish starting in, I think it's kindergarten. They start getting some Spanish, and it's they get a couple hours a week, and we've now moved that program all the way through the elementary school so that every year they're getting Spanish that's more and more advanced, and by the time they get to, I think it's sixth grade now, they're going to be eligible to take a Spanish course. But we don't have to do that. We don't have to have Minds in Motion, where the Richmond Dance Ballet comes in and teaches all our fourth graders how to dance and move and interpret. They tie in the SOLs when they do that. That costs $70,000 or something a year. Our Spanish program costs a few $100,000 a year at this point. And so if we want to not have the school system we have, we can do that. But if the citizens want to continue to have the school system we have, then we need to, either the city needs to reprioritize where its spending goes, or we need to look for other sources of funding.
Question 9. Do you support the grade reconfiguration plan for city schools such that Buford will house grade 6 through 8 as the only middle school? If so, how will that be funded, and can it happen in your next term?
Yeah, well, we've already spent some time talking about that. I absolutely do continue to support it. I think that it's pedagogically correct to have fewer transitions. Right now, students are in elementary school up to fourth grade, and then they go to fifth, sixth at Walker, and then they have another transition for seventh, eighth at Buford, and then go to the high school. And so that's it's a tough age group, a challenging age to begin with, and then to throw in transitions like this, it's tough on the kids, and it's tough on the teachers. The teachers have one less year in middle school to follow kids and to talk to the teachers in the building about, yeah, I know that Billy, the thing you need to do with him is such and such. And so there's it's tough on the teachers to not have the kids around, and the administrators to not be able to follow the kids for an extra year during these tough transition years. It's tough on the parents as well. The PTO kind of struggles because you get there as a sixth grade parent, and you're not really, this is a much bigger school, and so even if you're in leadership at the elementary school level, you're not quite ready to be president or vice president of the PTO. And so then you wait one more year, and then you get into a leadership position. So anyway, the leadership only stays there for 1 year. And so there's a lot of turnover in that, and it's tough to have as strong an organization as you could have otherwise. So I think that getting to one middle school is the right thing to do. I think that even in the school board and in the community talked about this, that even if you weren't going to have a standard middle school, that Buford itself, just the building, needs an upgrade. And we talked about this before, that the city hasn't had to invest major dollars in capital improvements as far as upgrading what you see and the experience in the building. The city has done a great job of maintaining our schools, and let me be the first to say that schools are very well maintained. But Buford and Walker were built in 1965, and that is what they are. They're buildings from 1965. They haven't really changed since then, except for the very exciting labs that we did get city to fund because the reconfiguration was being pushed off. City Council was like, well, is there something we can do in the meantime to make these schools more of a modern learning environment? And so we took them on tours of the science labs at CHS and Buford, and they agreed that that was an area that needed enhancements after all these years. And so we have brand new labs at Buford that include 3D printers. It's part of a collaboration with UVA and the Curry School, and Albemarle has Jack Jewett in the same program, and so that's very exciting. And CHS is also getting an advanced manufacturing lab built into the media center. So those things are great, but still the rest of the building at Buford is the same building it's been since 1965. Well maintained, but it's the same building it's been. It's a campus style. There are doors all over the place. You have to go into different buildings. It's a security and HVAC nightmare in that regard. It's not an attractive building. The offices are downstairs, so when you go and drive up to the building, you have to figure out where the office is. You have to go downstairs to get there. And for a community that really does value education, and I know our community does, I think that needs to be reflected in our buildings themselves. And I think that's something we need to do. We need to get to doing that. And so if you reinvigorate Buford as its current two-grade standard, you can save some money by just doing that. But if it doesn't cost that much more to go and add another grade to it so that it's traditional, and you put the fifth grade back in the elementary school under the reconfiguration plan, which is where it was when I went through the Charlottesville school system. I went to Greenbrier, and we were there till fifth grade. And so I think that and most parents we talk to are, you know, again, are very happy with their elementary school's experience, and they really like the idea of staying there another year, which is sort of the standard model. And the reconfiguration solves other problems that we have. Again, we're paying rental money for Henry Avenue, our alternative learning program, paying rental for adult education. Our central office staff is now split between two buildings. There's part of it at the central office one next to Walker, and part of it is in the basement of CHS. If that is an inefficient way for them to be when they have meetings, they have to drive to the meetings. If they're bringing materials and that sort of thing, they got to be in a car, and it's just not a positive thing for them to be split. In addition, if we can get them centralized, and the idea was to centralize them into the Walker building in addition to making it a preschool center, then that frees up the current central office space to bring in Henry Avenue and save the money for that, and have it closer to a school campus where it can enjoy some of the amenities of a regular school campus. And it would free up the downstairs of CHS to create alternative high school programming. And so there's a lot of advantages to the reconfiguration by moving the preschools out of the elementary schools and into a center. It allows us more room to grow the three-year-old preschool program, and that's something that was very much an attractor to going with the reconfiguration idea. So I still remain very much in favor of the reconfiguration. It's a significant expense, and you can only do what you can do, and I understand that. It's going to be a dialogue we have with the city and the, you know, frankly, the citizens of the city, because it's, again, a significant expense, and how do you get there? How do you reprioritize current spending or set aside enough money to make this happen? But it's something I very much want to push for and see us realize. I don't know that it's going to happen in the next 4 years, but I think in the near future we ought to have a plan for when it is going to happen, so that the community knows what to expect. We do hear a lot of questions in the community about when's this going to happen, and so we need to come up with an answer.
Thank you very much.
You bet.